Okay, go ahead and turn to Psalm 37 again. We made it down to verse 6, and I'll just read verses 1 through 6, and then we will take a look at verses 6 through 8, Lord willing. Psalm 37, in verse 1, "Fret not thyself because of evildoers, neither be thou envious against the workers of iniquity, for they shall soon be cut down like the grass and wither as the green herb. Trust in the Lord and do good, so shalt thou dwell in the land, and verily thou shalt be fed. Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. Commit thy way unto the Lord. Trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. And he shall bring forth thy righteousness as the light, and thy judgment as the noonday." So we see that when we delight ourselves in the Lord, commit our way unto him, that it says that God will bring forth our righteousness as the light. And how he does that is he brings forth the righteousness that he has already worked into us. And when we act in faith and commit our way unto him and delight in him, then that righteousness that has been worked into us then can shine forth out of us. And Jesus talked about this concept in Matthew chapter 5, verses 14 through 16. When he said that we ought to be the children of light, we are the children of light, we ought to let our light shine. And this matches up pretty well with, "And he shall bring forth thy righteousness as the light." In Matthew chapter 5, verses 14 through 16, Jesus said, "Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on an hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." So the way that men see our light is by seeing our good works that we do. That is the righteousness that is shining forth as the light, as David talks about here in Psalm 37. In Matthew 25, Jesus taught the parable of the 10 virgins, if you remember that one. And these virgins were, basically, it seems to me they were in like some kind of a wedding party or something. I'm not sure. The custom of the day back then is a bit different than the wedding custom that we have today. But these virgins were waiting on the bridegroom, and obviously all 10 of them weren't going to marry him. So I don't know if these are like bridesmaids or something like that. I'm not totally familiar with the custom. But these virgins were waiting on him, and they took their lamps with them, but some of them didn't take the oil with them. They weren't letting their light shine. We read in Matthew 25, verses 1 through 13, Jesus said, "Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins, which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. And 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept." Of course, we know the bridegroom is Jesus Christ, and he's called the bridegroom in other places. And the virgins would be likened unto the bride of Christ, or in this case, maybe not a direct parallel in the parable, but the friends of the bride or something like that. Anyway, they're waiting on the bridegroom. And it says there, and what verse did I leave off on? Verse 4, "But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, Behold, the bridegroom cometh, come ye out to meet him. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, Give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. But the wise answered, saying, Not so, lest there be not enough for us and you, but go ye rather to them that sell and buy for yourselves. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterward also the other virgins saying, Lord, afterward came also the other virgins saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, Verily I say unto you, I know you not. Watch therefore, for ye know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh." If you compare this parable with the parable of the wedding feast, remember there was a man that made a wedding for his son, and he went out and he bid The Jews, which is what the parable was referring to, he bids the Jews to come, and they made excuse not to come. And then he says, go out into the highways and the hedges and compel people to come in. And then the wedding is full, all of the attendants and the guests. And then they find a man without a wedding garment, and the man without the wedding garment is cast out. And you see something similar in this parable. The five of the virgins here have their lamps and they have oil in them, right? And five of them don't have oil. And the ones that don't have oil and that don't have, therefore, light within them are not the children of God. And whenever the bridegroom comes, they're not prepared. They don't have light and righteousness within them. And then when they come knocking at the door, he says, I don't know who you are. Depart from me. Which matches quite well with Matthew 7, right? Whenever Jesus taught that not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of God, but of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father. So anyway, the point being is that these virgins here had the oil and the light in them. They're letting their righteousness shine forth, which is what we should do, and which is the evidence that we are those who will be called to the marriage and not cast out without the light or without the garment. Now, if you look in Matthew 13, verse 43, Matthew 13, 43, Jesus said, then shall the righteous shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father, who hath ears to hear, let him hear. In the king, in this is the eternal kingdom. At the resurrection, we're going to shine forth. The light that has been put in us, the righteousness that has been put in us, will be able to fully be revealed, and there's going to be no more dead, rotting, sinful flesh covering it up and concealing it. We will shine forth as the light, which makes sense because it says that when Jesus shall appear, we shall be like him, right? We shall see him as he is. And whenever he appeared on the Mount of Transfiguration, he shone as the light. And whenever he comes back in glory, his face will shine, and we are going to be in some way similar to that. In 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 6, it says that the light that we have is the light of the knowledge of in the face of Jesus Christ. Words to that effect in 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 6. It says, in whom the God of this world hath blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them. I wanted 6. 2 Corinthians 4, 6, not verse 4. Pardon me. I was thinking whenever I said 6, and then I gave the brief explanation of it, I was thinking of verse 4. Anyway, verse 6. For God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, hath shined in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. So God shines in our hearts. He puts that righteousness within us, and then that righteousness can shine forth back out of us. And the Lord, or Paul, under the inspiration of God, tells us in Philippians chapter 2, he teaches us this very principle that God works the righteousness in, and then it's our job to work out that righteousness and let it shine forth. In Philippians 2, 12 through 15, this is why it's important to commit our way unto the Lord, trust also in him. And the other things that we read there in Psalm 37, this is how we work out that righteousness. Philippians 2 and verse 12, wherefore, my beloved, as ye have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God which worketh in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Do all things without murmurings and disputings, that ye may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom ye shine as lights in the world. So when we work out our own salvation by doing the good works that God has created us to do, then we let our light shine, and our righteousness comes out as the light for the world to see. Now, the second part of that verse, it says that in thy judgment as the noonday. So both our righteousness and our judgment will be visible for all to see whenever we delight ourselves in the Lord and commit ourselves unto Him and trust also in Him. And when we delight in the Lord by studying His Word and seeking His knowledge and wisdom, then we will understand judgment. And this is how our judgment will be shown as the noonday. If we look in Proverbs 1, 1 through 5, we are given here in Proverbs 1 and in Proverbs 2 the formula to get wisdom and knowledge and to understand judgment. Proverbs 1, 1 through 5. Says the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding. This is why Solomon wrote these Proverbs. To receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity. To give subtlety to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. So the purpose of the Proverbs here, given us in just the very first verses of it, is to know instruction, wisdom, justice, and judgment. So we learn judgment by being wise and attaining unto wise counsels, by seeking God and His Word and seeking wise men that we can learn it from. And then in Proverbs chapter 2, Solomon gives us a formula, an if-then formula, for how we acquire the knowledge of God, and once we acquire the knowledge and wisdom of God, then we can acquire judgment, and we can know how to make right and good decisions. In Proverbs 2, 1 through 9, it says, "My son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee." See, this is conditional. It's given with an if statement. "So that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thine heart to understanding." See, it takes work. Incline your ear means to bend it down, like to lean in and listen carefully. And apply your heart to understanding. That's work and labor. When you apply yourself to something, that means that you're putting effort into it. "Yea, if thou criest after knowledge," that means you gotta ask for it. And you don't only have to ask for it, you have to ask for it with a loud voice. Figuratively speaking, or naturally speaking, I remember literally crying out to God in the shower one night before I was converted that I wanted to know the truth, no matter what. So God wants you to ask for it, and He wants you to ask for it with passion and with conviction. "If thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding, if thou seekest her as silver," you got to look for it as if it's something valuable. You know, most people with religion, it's just kind of like, well, you know, take it or leave it. Or it's just complicated. Everybody's got their own idea of what it means and who can really know. And if you have that attitude, well, you're never going to know. But if you want to seek it like you would silver, then you'll find it. "And searchest for her as for hid treasures." Remember, the kingdom of God is like treasure hid in a field. And the man found it and he sold all that he had to buy that field. It was worth it to buy the whole field just to get the treasure that was found buried within it. So look at the ifs. You got three ifs there, and then verse 5 says, Then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord, and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord giveth wisdom, out of His mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. So you say, okay, but so how exactly do I find and acquire the knowledge of God? Verse 6 tells us, it comes from the Lord's mouth, which means it's His words, right? And His words are inspired and put down in this Bible. So God gives you the wisdom and the understanding and the knowledge through His Word. That's where you have to seek and dig and study. "He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly." It means He protects them. He watches over them. "He keepeth the paths of judgment and preserveth the way of His saints. Then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path." You see, understanding judgment comes after you have received the words, hid them within thee, inclined your ear to wisdom, applied your heart to understanding, cried after knowledge, lifted up your voice for understanding, sought it as silver and as hid treasures. Then you understand the knowledge and wisdom of God, And then after that, then judgment is given unto you. So it's a process in order to get the judgment, to get good judgment from the Lord. And this goes back to Psalm 37. If you commit your way unto Him, you trust also in Him, you don't fret against the wicked, and you don't envy the wicked, and you just put your trust and your delight in the Lord, then your judgment will shine forth as the noonday. People are going to see you as a person of good judgment. And isn't that something that we all admire? I do. When I see somebody that has good judgment, that makes good decisions, that's an admirable person to me. But then on the other hand, when you see somebody making foolish decisions, what do? Shake your head, do a face palm, get aggravated, irritated, right? Their lack of judgment also shines as the noonday, but that's not exactly a commendation of them. It says, I'm just thinking of proverbs that come to mind, like a fool's wrath is presently known. You know, people, fools, their wrath or their lack of judgment will be shown. It will be known. But our good judgment can be too. When we commit our way unto the Lord, who leads in the paths of judgment, then we'll understand it better because He will lead us into it. In Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 20, it says, God says, wisdom personified, who is pictures the Lord Jesus Christ here, He says, I lead in the way of righteousness in the midst of the paths of judgment. So this is where God leads. Whenever you're walking in the paths of judgment, you are walking on paths that God is leading you in. The Lord will teach us judgment when we seek it, and then He'll guide us in it. So you got to seek the judgment, and then He will guide you in it. In Psalm 119 and verse 66. This is why I think it's so important for everybody to read the Proverbs and read them often. And I know I've told you this before, but I've been reading a chapter a day of Proverbs for the last 12 years. And it's really easy to do because there's 31 chapters in Proverbs and there's 30 to 31 days in every month. So whatever the day of the month is, just read that chapter of Proverbs that day. So today's, what, the 25th? So we read Proverbs chapter 25 this morning at breakfast time. And when you do that, you'd be amazed. Well, you're reading the book of Proverbs, the whole book of Proverbs, 12 times a year, right? You're reading, how many times a year? Yeah, 12 times a year. Yeah, you're reading a proverb a month. You're reading the whole book of Proverbs once a month. So you're reading the entire book of Proverbs 12 times a year. And when you do that for 10 years or so, and you've read the entire book of Proverbs 150 times, it starts to seep in, and you start to remember it, memorize it, and then you start to think it and live it. So it takes a while, but if you do that, that's the way that you will get good wisdom and judgment from the Lord. Psalm 119 and verse 66. Psalm 119, 66. It says, teach me good judgment and knowledge, for I have believed thy commandments. The psalmist here asks for good judgment and knowledge, and then here's his bargaining chip. I believe thy commandments. Lord, I believe your word. Now please teach me. Give me good judgment. But you see, the belief has to come first. We have to believe that God is, that He's a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him, and then do what it says in Proverbs chapter 2, and seek it out and search it. And then He will give you, teach you good judgment. He'll guide us in it in Psalm 25 and verse 9. Psalm 25 and verse 9. It says, the meek will He guide in judgment. The meek will He teach His way. So here's another qualification to getting judgment, good judgment, is being meek, which means being humble, being teachable, being willing to learn from somebody and not arrogant. So when God sees a meek spirit like that, and He sees somebody that believes in His word and that searches His word, then He teaches you judgment and gives you the ability to make good decisions. Our mouths will speak judgment when we keep it. Look in Psalm 37 and verse 30. Psalm 37 and verse 30. We'll get to this verse, in many weeks from now. And then I have some interesting things to talk about when I get to that one, because I have been working ahead a little bit, so I already covered this one. But I'll just give you this, the verse for now. It says, "The mouth of the righteous speaketh wisdom, and his tongue talketh of judgment." You see, the world hates judgment, right? Especially when it comes to the type of judgment where making good decisions, they're okay with that. But the kind of judgment where you look at something and you say, no, that's wrong and that's right. The world doesn't like that kind of judgment. But the righteous, they talk of judgment. They speak wisely, and they also speak discriminately. And they say, this is right and that's wrong. And when you do that, your judgment shines forth. And the world can see that you are wise and godly because you approve of the things that are good and you condemn the things that are evil. Look at Psalm 106 and verse 3. Psalm 106 and verse 3. "Blessed are they that keep judgment, and he that doeth righteousness at all times." There's a lot packed into that little verse. First of all, those that keep judgment are blessed, right? So those that have good judgment, that hold on to good judgment, that exercise good judgment, they're blessed. And look at the last part of that. "He that doeth righteousness at all times." That's the true... That is the true, what's the word I'm looking for? Indicator. That's not the word I'm looking for, but it'll work. That's the true indicator of a righteous man, is that he keeps it at all times. If we only do judgment and do righteousness some of the time, or when people are looking, or when it's convenient to do so, or profitable to do so, then we're not really showing forth righteousness, right? But it's the person that does the right thing all the time when somebody's looking and when somebody's not looking, even when it costs them. Like it says in Psalms, I think it's Psalm 15, that the righteous man will swear to his own hurt and change not. Is it Psalm 15? Yeah, Psalm 15 and verse 4. It says, "In whose eyes a vile person is contemned, but he honoreth them that fear the Lord. He that sweareth to his own hurt and changeth not." And this is talking about the righteous. The whole psalm is talking about the righteous. So the righteous man contemns a vile person. He has good judgment. He says, that guy's wrong. What he's doing is sinful. And that is disgusting to me. And he contemns it. He has contempt for it. And he's the kind of guy that keeps righteousness at all times. Even when he makes a deal with somebody and then realizes later, promises somebody something and realizes later, that was stupid, that's going to cost me time or money or it's going to be embarrassing or whatever, he swears to his own hurt and changes not. He doeth righteousness at all times. And the person that does that is blessed, the scripture says. Well, once we have learned the judgment of God, once we have sought it and cried after it, and Proverbs said in Proverbs chapter 2, what did it say?
Inclined our ear to it,
and
silver,
and searches for it as for hid treasures, and the other things that it says about it, cried after knowledge, lifted up our voice for it, received it and hid it in our hearts, and all those things. See, if I read Proverbs more, I would have remembered that stuff. Once we've done all that, and God has given us knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, and then out of that comes judgment. Once we have that, then judgment and doing judgment will be a joy to us. It's not going to be a labor to us anymore. In Proverbs 21 and verse 15. Proverbs 21 and verse 15. It says, "It is joy to the just to do judgment, but destruction shall be to the workers of iniquity." You see, righteous people are happy to do judgment. They're happy to make good decisions. No matter how you want to look at judgment, you want to look at it in the aspect of making good decisions, they're happy to do that because it's beneficial to you, of course. But they're also happy to make judgments between right and wrong. They're happy to say, you know what? That guy living with his girlfriend is wrong, and that's sinful. That guy marching in that gay pride parade is wrong. That's wickedness. You know, that college professor that's teaching evolution, he's wrong. You know what? He's denying God. He's wrong. Target making transgender bathrooms, that's wrong. You know, the righteous, whenever he has acquired judgment from God, then it's a joy to him to point out what's right and wrong. He's not ashamed of it. He's not worried about it. He'll tell people, if they ask him, what's right and wrong. So this is how our judgment can shine forth as the noonday then. But there's some steps that you have to go through to get it.
Pastor, you know how Paul says it's a joy? So Paul, it says when you're persecuted, or is it
James. Count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations. Is that the one you're thinking of?
I was thinking of that one where we're supposed to joy in persecutions, though, as well.
Yeah, I think that's in that is Paul in Romans chapter 5, I think is what you're talking about. Where he says, Romans 5 and verse 3, and not only so, but we glory in tribulations, also knowing that tribulation worketh patience, patience experience hope.
So it can bring tribulation to you if you judge rightly.
Yes, it can.
So we have to have the joy in the judgment, and that's a light, and then we have to have the joy in the tribulation that judgment brings us, because the world will hate the light because they hated him who brought the light.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Roaches run from the light. Mm-hmm. They don't like it. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right. Yeah, you got to be prepared. When you start issuing out judgments, people are not going to like that. But when you learn to not care what people think anymore, and when you learn to just view that as a feather in your cap whenever people get mad at you because you believe the truth and aren't afraid to tell them, then, hey, you can join in that. Let's go to verse 7, Psalm 37 and verse 7. Psalm 37:7. Rest in the Lord, and wait patiently for him. Fret not thyself because of him who prospereth in his way, because of the man who bringeth wicked devices to pass. Now, we are once again being reminded of what David started out with in verse 1, to fret not thyself because of evildoers. He tells us here again, fret not thyself because of him who prospereth in his way, because of the man who bringeth wicked devices to pass. Sometimes it's hard not to fret. I was just talking to Austin down there this weekend, and he was telling me about his truck had some kind of a sensor go out of it, and it's a diesel, and what they'll do is they program these things now. If you don't get it fixed, they'll limit you to 30 miles an hour or something on the highway. And then if you just clear the code and make it so the truck will run, then police, this is crazy, but they can actually stop you, scan a code on your truck or something, and know what's supposed to be in it or something. I don't know how. Anyway, they figure out that you modified something in there. And he knew a friend or knew of a guy that this happened to, and he got a $10,000 fine and crazy amount. I mean, just all this unreasonable punishment for just taking off some efficiency, some environmental stuff on his truck. I mean, something that none of the government's business anyway, and probably doesn't make any bit of difference anyway as far as the atmosphere or anything like that goes. It's just stuff like that, and I just thought, that's outrageous. I mean, that is just totally, and it just causes me to want to start to fret and get irritated about the things that these bureaucrats can do to you and just destroy your lives. The airbags?
You can't shut those off. If you do, there's a jail time and penalty.
Right, yeah. It's just, it's outrageous, some of the stuff that, how they've destroyed people's lives on, you know, draining a pond or something. It's considered a wetland on your property, or, I mean, things like that. And they just, it's hard not to fret sometimes. And I just thought, wow, if that was me and I got a $10,000 fine, I mean, that would be, It'd be the time to pull out Psalm 37 and start reading it repeatedly. Anyway, so here in this verse, we see that the key to not fretting because of the wicked is to do the opposite, and that is to rest and wait patiently. To fret, I will remind you, I've defined this earlier, but I'll read it again, is to chafe or irritate. It is chiefly with regard to the mind, to annoy, distress, vex, worry. Also to fret oneself and to bring into or to a specified condition by worrying. And that's why I use this definition, because it gives the very phrase that we're looking at here, to fret oneself. And this is what he says, fret not thyself. On the other hand, to rest is to take repose by lying down, and especially by going to sleep, to lie still or in slumber. He says to rest in the Lord and wait patiently. Patiently is in a patient manner with patience. Patient is bearing or enduring pain, affliction, trouble, or evil of any kind with composure, without discontent or complaint, having the quality or capacity of so bearing, exercising or possessing patience, calmly expectant, not hasty or impetuous, quietly awaiting the course or issue of events, etc. Now, we can read that definition of patience, and we think, that sounds good. I'd love to be like that. And then you examine the last day or week or month of your life, and you realize, I don't always act like that. I don't always endure affliction and pain with calmness and composure. And I don't always just bear with things and calmly wait and not be impetuous and just be quiet. But that's what we're supposed to do. And it seems like to me that if you can master that, you've probably really grown and matured as a Christian. If you can have true patience, and I don't mean you can sit at the doctor's office for a half an hour waiting for your appointment and not walk up there and tell the nurse off or something. But I mean, if you can really master that definition, and you can bear and endure evil and affliction and trouble and evil with composure and without discontent and complaint, you have become a mature Christian. And I think that's something that we can all work toward, because I don't think any of us have that mastered, or at least I'm making myself feel better by implicating the rest of you and saying that you probably don't either, because that's a toughie. But this is the key to not fretting, to rest and to wait patiently on the Lord. Fretting ourselves because of evil men who are prospering is laborious. You think about that. That's a lot of work. It's a lot of weight on you. It's a lot of emotional trauma to worry and get angry and have angst because of the wicked that are out there. Like the little story that I told, I just had to stop thinking about that because it made me angry. And you just got to stop. And you got to rest. Rest is the remedy for fretting. Because worrying about it is not going to change anything, is it? And the thing is, it's like kind of like hating somebody or envying somebody, being angry at somebody and not forgiving them. Who does it hurt? It hurts you, right? It doesn't hurt the other person. They might not even know you're angry about it. And here you are just working yourself up into mental turmoil, and they're out there living their merry lives, and they're happy as a clam, and you are destroying yourself. Let's just go to a verse that just tells us that worrying about stuff isn't going to change it. And therefore, it's not a good use of our time. Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12, verses 25 through 26. Luke 12, 25 and 26. And which of you, Jesus said, with taking thought, can add to his stature one cubit? Cubit's about a foot and a half. So which of you, James, if you sat there and thought, could you make yourself, let's see, a foot and a half, that'd make you about 8 feet tall. Could you make yourself 8 feet tall by just thinking about it? No, you couldn't. It's totally impossible. My wife could not make herself 5 feet tall by thinking about it. Could you? That was so mean, I know.
Patience.
Patience, that's right. She's not really 3.5 feet tall. I was just kidding. Verse 26. If ye then be not able to do that which is least, why take ye thought for the rest? If you can't even make yourself a foot and a half taller by thinking about it, why would you fret about some guy in Washington, D.C. that is scheming to somehow screw you? And there are plenty of them out there that are doing it. But if you can't make yourself a foot and a half taller, why would you worry and fret about that guy or the guy in St. Paul or whoever the guy is that's trying to make your life miserable? It doesn't do any good, does it? Jesus tells those who are laboring and are heavy laden under burdens to come unto him and find rest for their souls. Remember, this is what he says. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. And that's how you don't end up fretting yourself because of evil men. Rest. Matthew 11:28-30. Jesus said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls, for my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." So whenever you are fretting because of evil men, whether they're government people or corporate people or neighbors or friends that are picking on you on the school bus or wherever, or the neighbor kids or whatever, whenever you feel the need or the temptation to fret, give it to Jesus. Tell Jesus, "You know what, Lord? I can't do anything about these people, but I know that you can, and you just deal with them. And you just take this, and I'm not going to worry about it anymore, and I'm going to trust that whatever they're trying to do to me, they won't be able to accomplish. And if they do, then it will work patience in me, and it'll be for my better anyway." And just give it to the Lord, and then you can, once you stop worrying about it, then you can rest and not fret. Martha's kind of a good example of this. Remember Martha, Mary's sister? I just noticed this. I just added this into the outline today because I just got thinking about this. In Luke chapter 10, verses 38 through 40, we read this story about when Jesus came to Mary and Martha's house. And Martha was just running around like a chicken with her head cut off, and she was just all worked up into a tizzy, and she was upset that her sister Mary was just kind of taking it easy and hanging out with Jesus. And in Luke 10, 38 through 40, it says, "Now it came to pass, as they went, and he entered into a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha received him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, which also sat at Jesus' feet, and heard his word. But Martha was cumbered about much serving, and came to him, and said, 'Lord, dost thou not care that my sister hath left me to serve alone? Bid her, therefore, that she help me.' And Jesus answered and said unto her, 'Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things, but one thing is needful, and Mary hath chosen that good part which shall not be taken from her.'" Dr. Ben Townsend preached a sermon at the pastor's conference this year. Yeah, it was this year. And he was talking about this phenomenon when you can, and I think he was really talking about preachers, when preachers can get, end up really harming themselves when they are asking the Lord, "Lord, bid her or bid him to do this," whatever we think they should be doing. And he came up with a little saying, and it makes it so you never forget it, or hopefully I won't forget it for a long time. He said, "Bid her-ness can quickly turn into bitterness." Because whenever you're asking God, "Lord, bid her or him to do this or that," then you end up, instead of just asking, "Lord, it would be best for them if they would do this. Lord, would you nudge them to do this?" And then when it doesn't happen, and Lord, come on, nudge them to do this. And then before you know it, then it becomes into bitterness, where you're angry. That person's not doing whatever I want them to do or whatever I think they should do. It was a really good sermon. So Martha, you notice, was cumbered about much serving. I looked up the definition of cumber. And it means to overwhelm, overthrow, rout, or destroy. To be overwhelmed and held fast as in a slough. So Martha was overwhelmed. She's got all this work she's doing. She's running around and serving and cooking and just worrying about all the mundane stuff. And she's overworking herself. And then she wants Jesus to tell her sister to help her out. But you see, because Martha was cumbered about, was overwhelmed with things, then she ended up becoming careful and troubled about many things there in verse 41. That's what Jesus said. Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things. Careful means full of grief, mournful, sorrowful, also of cries, etc., expressing sorrow. It is full of care, trouble, anxiety, or concern, anxious, troubled, solicitous, concerned. So when Jesus says she's careful, he doesn't mean that she's being very diligent when she's cooking to not make a mess or to not burn herself on the stove or something. When we say careful today, we mean you're being cautious. You know, that's not what it meant back then. It means that she was full of care, trouble, anxiety, concern. She was just a bundle of nerves, and she was running herself crazy. It says she's troubled, which means physically agitated of the sea, sky, etc., stormy, of water, wine, etc., stirred up so as to diffuse the sediment, made thick or muddy, turbid. That's, of course, the physical definition of trouble, like when water is stirred up. Secondly, which would be more of a mental state, is disturbed, disquieted, disordered, agitated, or afflicted. This is what Mary was: disturbed, agitated, afflicted. She's got all kinds of mental turmoil going on in her head because she's got too many things to do. She's overwhelming herself with all of this work. What she needed to do was rest and spend some time with Jesus like her sister Mary did. See, Mary was not worrying about everything. She's going to spend time with Jesus. And Jesus said that Mary had chosen the good part and it wouldn't be taken from her. Now, in order to rest, we must be mentally, or we must be still mentally and physically. You ever try to rest whenever you're out jogging? It's pretty hard to rest, right, when you're not physically still, right? Yeah, that's pretty obvious. You got to be physically still. But just as important, you got to be mentally still. You ever try to lay down and sleep at night when your mind is racing? You know, you ever do that? We used to go to those meetup groups, remember that? And I'd come home from those things so wound up because it was just so intense, like debating back and forth, and you're just thinking. I mean, you're really thinking hard when you're at those things because you're trying to, come up with the best arguments and defend your position. And then you come home and you're thinking about it, and you're talking about, oh, remember I said this to that guy, and da da da. And you lay down, and I mean, I couldn't sleep. Sometimes I couldn't sleep for hours, because your mind is just racing. You gotta be quiet. Mentally quiet. That's the only way you can get rest. I find it works well for me, and I know I've said this before. I probably sound like an old guy, like a broken record, but to read before I go to bed, I lay down, even if it's past bedtime, because you think, oh, it's bedtime, I got to get to sleep. But if my mind is going, I may as well read for a while anyway, because I'm not going to get to sleep regardless. So I just pull out a book and read for, depends, but maybe even up to a half an hour sometimes. And before you know it, you're starting to fall asleep. You just lay the book down, turn the light out, and you'd be conked out. Now, when we're still, we will know that the Lord is God and that all things are in His control. But you got to be still before you realize that. Psalm 46 and verse 10. If you're not still, and I speak of being mentally, emotionally still, if you're not still, you're not going to remember that the Lord's God and that He has things under control, because you're going to be like a Martha that's cumbered about and running around like a chicken with your head cut off. You got to be still. You got to take time and settle down, quiet down, pray, read your Bible, give yourself that quiet time, and then you'll recognize and you'll remember that God's in control of all things and there's nothing to worry about. Psalm 46 and verse 10 says, "Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah." You got to keep the order. Be still and know that I am God. When you're still, then you can know who's God. And then you can know that He'll be exalted among the heathen and in the earth. That He reigns from heaven, that He will do whatever He wants. Rest is acquired not by worrying, but by doing the opposite, by casting those cares upon the Lord, by giving them over to Him. Instead of you thinking about them, just let God think about them, and He can figure out how to solve all these problems. I know this is easier said than done, but Philippians 4 and verses 6 through 7. Philippians 4, 6 through 7. Be careful for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God, and the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Remember what careful meant. We read that. It means to be anxious, to have anxiety or concern, or be troubled. Well, God says, don't be like that. Don't be anxious. Don't be concerned. Don't be worried and troubled. For nothing, for anything. But when you have those troubles and cares, what does it tell us to do? Go to the Lord in prayer, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving. So supplication is when you ask God for something. And then be sure to thank God for what He's given you. Let your request be made known unto God, and what does God say will happen? He'll give you peace, right? Isn't that what we're learning about in Psalm 37? That if we trust in the Lord, if we do good, if we, what was the part that we're just reading there? When we rest and wait patiently for Him, we're not going to end up fretting and being careful. He'll give us peace and then a calm that passes all understanding. And then our hearts and minds should be kept from worry, kept from fear. Just calm. Peter said to cast our cares upon Him because He cares for us. You see, God cares. Like the old hymn we sing, does Jesus care? Yes, He cares. 1 Peter 5 and verse 7. Casting all your care upon Him, for He careth for you. He does care. Even when you're little and you're a kid and your cares and troubles seem insignificant to us adults, God cares about your troubles. And when you're adults, your cares seem insignificant to most other adults because they say, oh, what's the big deal? Quit worrying about it. But He cares. God cares. God knows our frame. He knows that we're but dust. He knows that we're flesh. And if we cast our cares upon Him, He will give us peace and calm. Look at Isaiah 26 and verse 3. This gives us the formula for having peace in our lives. Isaiah 26, 3, thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee. Trust ye in the Lord Jehovah, or trust ye in the Lord forever, for in the Lord Jehovah is everlasting strength. Now, rest is acquired by having your thoughts focused on godly things instead of fretting about the wicked and fretting about all the bad things in the world that are coming or could come. Instead of thinking about all those things, turn to Philippians 4:8 and think about good things, wholesome things, godly things. This is why it's not a good idea, and I know I've said this before, but it's not a good idea to spend inordinate amounts of time researching all the conspiracies and reading the news, watching the news, and hearing about all the horrible things that are going on in the world, and reading the financial news, and worrying about when the next collapse is coming. I mean, I don't think we should be ignorant of that stuff, and I think we, like I've said before, I think we should be, you know, moderately, reasonably prepared. If there's things that you can do, then you should. But to be reading about those things and worrying about them all the time is not good for your mental health. I'd say if anybody ever came to me, if I was some kind of a counselor or something, a psychologist, and they said, I'm struggling with anxiety and fears and I'm nervous a lot of the time, I would say, do you watch the evening news? Mm-hmm. Turn it off. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's got to be a major cause of anxiety when you turn that on. And all it is local news is just about how many murders there were in North Minneapolis last night, and national news is how we're going to be in the next World War III or whatever. I mean, it's all bad. It doesn't matter what level the news is. There's nothing good on there. Philippians 4 and verse 8 says, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, Whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. Things that are true. Well, that rules out TV pretty well. You're not going to find much truth there. Things that are honest. Things that are just. Things that are pure. Think about those things. Lovely. Things that are good report. Things that are virtuous. Think about God. Think about how He's saved you from your sins. Think about God's love for you. Think about all the blessings that He's put in your lives with your family, all the provision that He's made for you, and friends and your church, and all these things. Think on good things, wholesome things. When we're in a state of rest, then we can wait patiently and calmly, quietly on the Lord, and we wait for Him to judge the wicked. See, that's the thing. That's the key to it. Back there in Psalm 37, just pick up that verse. You don't need to turn there if you don't want to. I just want to get the text of that again. In verse 7, rest in the Lord and wait patiently for Him. Fret not thyself because of him who prospereth in the way, because of the man who bringeth wicked devices to pass. The reason why we don't have to worry about that is because then we can just wait on God to judge him. And God will punish the wicked that give us trouble. In His good time, though, it might take Him a while. It may not come as soon as we want, but He will eventually punish them. In 2 Thessalonians 1:6-9, 2 Thessalonians 1:6-9, you can rest in this. 2 Thessalonians 1:6-9. He says, seeing it is a righteous thing with God to recompense tribulation to them that trouble you. See, these Thessalonians had people that were troubling them. And God's saying, Paul's saying, God's going to recompense. He's going to repay. They're going to get what's coming to them. Just wait. And to you who are troubled, rest. Rest with us. When the Lord Jesus shall be revealed from heaven with his mighty angels in flaming fire, taking vengeance on them that know not God and that obey not the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, who shall be punished with everlasting destruction from the presence of the Lord and from the glory of his power. So, if nothing else, wait on the Lord and rest, because he's coming back a second time, hopefully soon. And the wicked that are vexing us and troubling us will be taken care of at that time. Can I do verse... We can do verse 8. Verse 8 is not very long. Do you want to do it, or do you want to... It's been 52 minutes.
You can do verse 8.
You want to do it? We can do it, or we can not do it. It's up to you guys.
Let's do it.
All right. Verse 8. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Fret not thyself in any wise to do evil. Now, here's the reason why we don't want to fret about the wicked. Because what fretting about the wicked will do is what we just read about in this verse. It will lead into anger, which will lead into wrath, and then which eventually will end up in us doing something bad. We're going to end up acting on that anger and wrath, and then we're going to be in trouble. We're going to lose control of ourselves. We're going to do evil. We're going to try to stop the wicked. We are going to try to recompense or repay or whatever. And then we're going to get in trouble whenever we try to exact revenge on them. And this is why we need to heed this. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. We want to be slow to wrath. In James 1 and verse 19. James 1:19. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Now, there's nothing wrong with anger. You can have righteous anger. Jesus had righteous anger. Remember, he threw the people out of the temple and made a scourge of small cords. And so there's nothing wrong with being angry, but we want to be slow to it. We don't want to be quick to it. In Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 9, I'll just give you just a few verses here, which remind us how important it is to control our spirits and our tempers and not be quick to anger. Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 9 says, be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools. Be not quick to be angry, because when we do that, we're acting like fools. Because a fool's wrath is presently known. I don't know if that's Proverbs 12 or if that one's coming up here, but Proverbs 12 and verse 16. Yes, that's the one I was thinking of. A fool's wrath is presently known, but a prudent man covereth shame. When a fool's mad, you're going to know about it. He's going to tell you about it right away. But the prudent man, see, he's wise enough to cover the shame because he knows if he flips out and starts yelling at somebody, he's going to be ashamed of himself. And he's going to cover that shame. He's going to control his spirit. Proverbs 14 and verse 29. Says, he that is slow to wrath is of great understanding, but he that is hasty of spirit exalteth folly. You can tell a guy, you want to see a guy that's wise. The guy that under provocation does not get angry. Mm-hmm. And the guy that can control his temper. Mm-hmm. And smart people, they can figure out who the fools are. And they can push the buttons right. And then they can get the guy to flip out. And then he's discredited. Mm-hmm. I'm sure, I mean, you've probably seen that in meetings before. You know, people that can just push your buttons just the right way. And then get somebody to lose their temper. And then whatever the guy, whether he was right or wrong... he's wrong now because he just lost it. So especially if somebody's trying to push your buttons, don't control your temper. Don't recognize what they're doing and take a step back from it. And don't let your anger come out because you're going to lose whatever that battle is. You don't want anger to linger and to fester. So if you do have anger and it's building up in you, make sure you take care of it. That's if it's with your spouse, with your children, with your brothers and sisters, with your co-workers, with your pastor, or whoever. If you're mad about something, don't let it build up. Just take care of it and go and address it with the person. Ephesians 4:26-27. Be ye angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil. So you don't want to let the sun go down upon your wrath. Either physically, don't, if you're angry with your spouse, don't go to bed angry until you've worked it out. And also, just speaking in general, don't let it linger on. Don't let it build up and let resentment build up. Keep your account short and take care of it. Because the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. Rarely, when you're in a state of anger, are you going to do the righteous thing. There is a such thing as righteous anger, and that's okay, but it's very hard to control yourself whenever you're at that point. James 1:20, it says, for the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. And Proverbs 29 and verse 22. Proverbs 29 and verse 22. It says, an angry man stirreth up strife, and a furious man aboundeth in transgression. James is exactly right. The wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. The furious man aboundeth in transgression, because it'll go from one transgression to the next. And it'll start out by abusing somebody with your words, and then if it continues, you might abuse somebody with your fists, and then you're really going to be in trouble. We must let God take the vengeance on the wicked and never let it be taken into our own hands. In Romans 12 and verse 19. This fits in perfectly with Psalm 37:8. Romans 12 and verse 19. Don't want to ever take these things into our own hands. Give it to the Lord and give it to the authorities if you need to. Romans 12 and verse 19, dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Give place. Give it to God. Let him take vengeance. Or, children, give it to your parents. If your brother or sister abuses you and smacks you across the face, then don't give place to wrath and don't do the same thing to them. Tell your parents, and your parents can exact the vengeance on them. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Fret not thyself in any wise to do evil. We never want to get to the point where we are so angry and irritated with the wicked that we decide, you know what? I'm going to take care of this. I'm going to go down there to Washington and I'm going to fix these problems with some kind of a violent revolution or something like that. We never, ever want to get to that point. So next time we'll pick up with verse 9.